First lady, the one they call Hillary. Oh,
yes, you owe me the president.
I don't want her. Can't stand her. But I need to get elected, so I. Now come on, what was I supposed to do? She was on a book tour, and those pretty young things look so fine.
Red pop and follow up, and President Stigwilly. Pain feeling fake, crying President Stigwilly. Figure fudging tree, hugging President Stigwilly. Hey, I Stigwilly. Red pop and follow up, and President Stigwilly. Tax raising skirt chasing President Stigwilly. Draft dodging dope smoking President Stigwilly. Paper shredding file scooping President Stigwilly. Hey, I Stigwilly. Ben popping photo whopping President Stigwilly. Pain feeling fake crying President Stigwilly. Pick your fudging tree hugging President Stigwilly. Hey, I Stigwilly. Tax raising skirt chasing President Stigwilly. Pain feeling fake crying President Stigwilly. Whopper telling flip flopping President Stigwilly. Hey, I Stigwilly.
Hey, baby, you be knowing we be taking a little travel time, you know, back a couple of years, maybe 3 years, 4 years, 5 years, whatever the case may be. But, you know, that be my man, Slick Willie, be singing to you. And this is your old Uncle Jerry Maureen. That's right. Jerry Maureen back to see you one more time. It's been a while. Matter of fact, I guess I was here just a few weeks ago and, my brother Jeff said, look, you turkey, why don't you come on back and shoot the breeze a little bit more? And, that's what we decided to do, is come on back. And, I'm trying to get this music set up. But, you know, that was a problem I always had here on this program. And anyway, we got to welcome you to Perspectives on America. And I'm your host this day for the entire hour, Jerry Maureen. That's right, Jeff's evil twin brother, Jerry Maureen, and you be listening to this program live on WWCR. That's Worldwide Christian Radio, you understand, and it be coming to you this morning and tonight or tomorrow or whenever you happen to be listening to this broadcast on, 12.160 at this hour of the day. And then, my friends, yeah, we be checking back in with you, I don't know, sometime at 1 o'clock in the morning, Monday through Friday on 3.210. I know I just be running my mouth, but you got to understand. Now, some of you people be tuning in saying, what in the world is going on with this Perspectives on America show today? Well, my brother Jeff has been putting himself through some multitudinous of a lot of physical and emotional stress the last 6 to 8 months, maybe a couple of years, I don't know. Specifically since Bill Clinton left office, because frankly, Jeff ain't got nothing to laugh about anymore, because the dude to be in office today, he just make you cry. That was a song by Johnny Ray, you understand. Now, let me be explaining to you a little bit about your Uncle Jerry Maureen. Jerry Maureen has a history that goes back some 35 years, although I'm a few years older than that, you understand, but ain't nobody knowing that stuff. Let me adjust my hat here. Yeah, it's backwards, you understand. Jerry Maureen had spent some time in country, you understand, you know, over in the jungles of Vietnam. Now, unlike our illustrious former leader, William Jefferson Clinton, Jerry has always admitted his practice, so to speak, of inhaling, you understand. And I ain't talking about no Marlboros. I'm talking about some Mary Jane. And but those days are long gone. I don't be touching that weed no more, the wacky weed stuff, you understand. Like my brother Jeff, I must admit, I am high on life, But today, we're going to spend a little time allowing your Uncle Jerry to give you some commentary on the state of affairs. Now, that's something our former leader was very good at, and it leads to our opening story. It's a little bit more of a joke, so to speak, as you will. But it's called Airplane. Now, there was a movie back in 1970 called Airplane with Dean Martin and that fine as wine Jacqueline Bisset, who made a greater career playing Jacqueline Kennedy, if you understand me. Anyway, so the story goes like this. Bill Clinton, and this is wishful thinking, you understand. Bill Clinton, Hillary Clinton, the president want-to-be, and the former vice president and presidential candidate Albert Gore Jr. were in an airplane that crashed. Now, that's the wishful thinking part. Bill Clinton, so now they're up in heaven, and God is sitting in the great white throne. God addresses Al Gore first, and he says, Al, what do you believe in? Al replies, well, I believe that I won that election, but that it was your will that I did not serve, and I've come to understand that now. God thinks for a second and says, well, okay, Al, that's very good. Now, you come sit on my left side. God then addresses Bill, the former president, the commander-in-chief, and says, Bill, what do you believe in? And Bill replies,
well, I believe in forgiveness. I've sinned, but I've never held a grudge against my fellow man, and I hope no grudges are held against me.
Well, yeah. Well, God thinks about that one for a second and says, well, you are forgiven, my son, and come and sit at my right. God then addresses Hillary and in effect says, Hillary, what do you believe in? And Hillary, in her rather non-sweet voice, answers to him, I believe you're in my chair.
I talk to the trees, that's why they made me VP.
Hey, baby, this new man reminded me of Michelle Pfeiffer, you know, in that fine movie. What was that movie called?
As I sit and dilly-dally on the Capitol steps, I take a look at my life and fantasize about the rest as I've been campaigning and fudging so long that even my party thinks my chances are strong. But I never took a handout that I wasn't deserving, even if it's from some monk that I never heard of. You better watch what you're driving and don't be smoking, cause me and my homies might be calling the shots. I always do what's best for the common folk. It's true, I raised a backa, but I never smoked. Fool, I'm the kind of wonk the little donkeys want to be like, doing just what I please, cutting deals with the Chinese.
He's been spending all his life living in an Al Gore paradise. Truth is often compromised, living in an Al Gore paradise. Core beliefs are sacrificed, living in an Al Gore paradise. His blood runs.
And the power and the money. Slip it in my pocket and I'll take it to the laundry. If you got a problem that needs a quick solution, you can have a talk with Bill for a minor contribution. I'm an educated tool with a White House on my mind. Got some coffee in my pot and some schemes to design. I'm a regulating tobacco growing tree hugging bumpkin. And if Bill gets the axe, then I'm gonna run the country. Cool. The White House is only a conviction away. If they ask me to serve, what can I say?
Tell me why is it so hard to see if he's really a man or just a tree? He's been spending all his life living in an Al Gore paradise. He doesn't have to be too wise living in an Al Gore paradise. There's no trouble from his wife living in an Al Gore paradise. Regulating is his life living in an Al Gore paradise. Oh.
You know, my friends, that's once again, as I share with you, we are going back some years, nearly 5 years ago, where your Uncle Jerry Marine, along with my brother Jeff, was privileged to make some films for public access television. And yes, believe it or not, there are 3 hours out there in cyberspace somewhere of Jerry Marine doing this radio broadcast, sitting in for my brother. And if you want something to laugh about, I suppose you could contact my brother and see about acquiring these historical, these windows on history, as it were, of what life was like in these United States of America back during 1998, 99, thereabouts, is when we made these films. In the interim, for reasons that I hope you will understand as this program goes on today, you will understand why we have gone back into the archives and pulled out this marvelous music by my man Paul Shanklin, who made a marvelous career out of sponging off the Clintons and their sick humor. To them it was humor, to us it was sick. Now, we open this program with some commentary about the Clintons and Al Gore visiting God. That leads us to our next commentary entitled Playing God and Other Lies. All I can say to you, my friends, is Terri Schiavo is safe, for now. Thanks to God, the Florida legislator, that's Florida legislature, and Governor Jeb Bush III Jr. Frankly, I don't think Bush had it in him. Who would have ever imagined any of the Bush clan, other than maybe Barbara, to display testicular apparatus? Jeb may have played it safe by getting a lot of legislative backup for his act, but credit where credit is due, my friends. But now we are treated to the howls and shrill cries of the Thanophiles. Those are death lovers, if you haven't. That's the word, Thanophiles, Thanophiles. That's no relation to Philo Vance. This is Thanophiles. Those are death lovers. Like the specter, not Phil, in the old black and white version of A Christmas Carol, they point their bony fingers accusingly at the governor and accuse him of playing God. That's quite a curious phrase, if one asks me, you know, playing God. Now, I'm only about 56, 57, about the same age as my brother, but considering we are twins, what do you expect? But I seem to recall that phrase being used from time to time since I was a child. It seems to me that back then, the term playing God was used exclusively with reference to killing people. Now, correct me if I'm wrong, but nowadays, it is almost always used by Thanophiles against those who are trying to keep people alive. How did this reversal happen? It's the American language, my friends. Bad is good, good is bad. Anyway, it's not without good reason that wiser heads than mine have said, he that frames the question wins the debate. The fact is, in the word-rich media world that we live in today, those who control the meanings of words are able to capture the hearts of the not very thoughtful public, which is to say, of course, the majority. Of course, it is all lies. The false use of words, clever euphemisms like fetus instead of child, or, heaven portend, baby. Misdirections like choice instead of abortion, or flat-out lies like gay is the tender of today's pagan forces. Don't use the terms gay and tender in the same sentence. It doesn't jive. But you know, it's a lot like a violation of God's Old Testament railing against false weights. That's discussed in Proverbs 20, verse 10, and in other places throughout the Holy Word. Words, my friends, have meaning. And those meanings should not be tampered with in order to deceive. However, since the media is largely sympathetic to the pagan agenda, they adopt and even invent terms designed to cast their issues in the light favorable to their agenda. The erstwhile 13-year-old rape victim who needs an abortion is a little girl for the purposes of the rape part of the story, and she's a young woman when it comes to her deciding to kill her child. Pro-life people seeking to save the life of infant baby Doe from starvation by parents who decided this was the way to prevent having to raise a Down syndrome child with a mild esophageal atresia, those pro-lifers who offer to adopt the child are called simply meddlers. And then, of course, there's the agonizing parents. They're simply exercising their right as parents to control the medical decisions for that child. On the other hand, those who step in to force certain parents to provide vaccinations or HIV medication or surgery for their children in violation of their religious convictions are portrayed as brave and yet even sometimes compassionate. Compassion. Ah, that's the word I love. Compassion is always, without exception, the action recommended by the left. And thus, when the court sought to starve Terry Schiavo, it was deemed compassion. What is not mentioned, of course, is that what this compassion entails. The news organs bleat that they remove the feeding tube, but that never happens. It is far too invasive a procedure to do willy-nilly. What really happens is that the feeding tube, instead of delivering nourishing food, now is used to deliver paralytic medications. Paralytics, you ask? Yes, my friends. This is so that as the brain dehydrates from lack of water, the body won't thrash around in ugly-looking fits. This way, the awful killing can take place with all the appearance of peaceful rest. What is happening inside, my friends, is far from peaceful. Consider this list of what happens to someone who is starved and dehydrated to death. The first day, the mouth becomes dry and caked with thick phlegm. You know, that's the stuff you'd be spitting out on the ground when you got a bunch of junk coming up out of your lungs because you've been smoking too many years. Over the next few days, the lips become parched and cracked. Further along, the eyes sink back into their sockets. The cheeks become hollow. The dream of a supermodel. The mucus lining in the nose eventually cracks, causing nosebleed. And after a week, the skin becomes dry and scaly and hangs loose on the body. The bladder begins burning because the urine becomes so concentrated. The drying out of the stomach causes dry heaves, and the body temperature rises precipitously. I like that word. It comes across on the air very well, don't you think? Precipitously. The drying out of the brain cells causes convulsions. That's controlled by the paralytic. Eventually, one by one, the major organs fail and the person dies. My friends, this takes 2 to 3 weeks. And the left calls this compassion. The media, of course, calls this pulling the plug, as though, like a light, once the plug is pulled, the light of life suddenly and finally dies. Now, who is playing God? Those who do this are those who try to preserve life. Is the man who administers CPR playing God, or is the one who puts the pillow over the face playing God? My friends, we are a long way down in this word game, but if we become educated to what is going on and fight back, then we can save lives and maybe even our culture or what is left of it. A good start would be to get a copy of a book entitled Dark Cures, Have Doctors Lost Their Ethics? And learn to blow the lid off the Thanophile's lies. We need to be very watchful of all the sick, elderly, or disabled who are among our family and friends and guard their lives. And that book may help you do that. Where you get the book, Dark Cures, Have Doctors Lost Their Ethics? I have no idea, but write the title down. See what you can find out about it. Now understand, normally I would be hesitant to promote anyone's books in such a venue, but I think the need is urgent. I'm well beyond getting any royalties from this book. In fact, I don't get any at all because I'm not the author. However, looking at Terry Schiavo's face reminded me of how important it is to have people on your side. Terry had never give up family. She had her never give up family. Who will the sick, the elderly, or the disabled in your family have? Wake up before the Thanophiles. I hate that word. The Thanophiles get 'em. Hear the old saw. Knowledge is power, is truer than ever. And that, my friends, has been the basis for this program of my brothers for well over 8 years now. Knowledge is power. How you choose to act with the knowledge gained by listening to this program each and every day is going to make a big difference in the direction this country takes in the years to come. I shall return in just a few more moments with ongoing commentary from your old friend, Uncle Jerry Moraine. Yeah.
This ain't no
Buddhist temple. Sound like Sheryl Crow music. What
this
a mouth.
This ain't no Motel 1600.
Uh-oh, wait a minute. That's a different
this
voice.
D.C.
D.C., baby.
All I want to do is have a little fun before I'm done. This is Gore next to me. I don't but I'm sure he's the world's only living brain donor and perfect VP. Cause he's just plain dumb, and I wonder if he's ever had a conscious moment in his whole life. We're drinking beer at noon on Monday, sitting in lawn chairs out in the front yard that looks out over America. But the good people of this country are out there working hard, paying their taxes, holding their own as best they can while we skirt a few. They want to pay some bills, buy a house, car, save for a vacation, something or other. But they're nothing like Al and me, because all I've got to do is have some fun, pick up some cheerleaders, cruise on Air Force One. All I've got to do is have some fun, and when I screw up, I'll just blame Republicans. All I've got to do is have some fun until the sun goes down on Pennsylvania Avenue. I like a burger and fries early every morning, and I like to peel the wrapper from his pack of Camel Lights. He puts it with some Bellin records he found in Hillary's trash, lights a Zippo and watches each file burn. Not knowing that I put lighter fluid on his pants, he's cursing him trying to put it out as I laugh and watch a trash blow across the lawn. And then John Wong pulls up to the White House, his pockets full of campaign donations. All the liberal press can do is smile, and all I'm gonna do is have some fun, catch a few rays, and sit and watch Al go run. All I'm gonna do is have some fun. I hate to tell him he's not the only one. All I'm gonna do is have some fun until the sun goes down on Pennsylvania Avenue. Until the sun goes down on Pennsylvania Avenue.
Yeah, I'd be liking that. A good rousing tune. But once again, Paul Shanklin as Bill Clinton doing his version of a fine Sheryl Crow song. Baby, yeah, right, whatever works. What is that song called? All I'm Gonna Do. Yeah, well, all he's gonna do, he did to us, not for us. And, you know, all I got to say is election year 2000 is coming upon us. And I have a fear, not of Bill Clinton being in the White House, because frankly, he'll be out picking up some dollies or working with a maid service. But his old lady, she be standing in line. I was be noticing on Newsmax the other day that, you know, my brother told you several weeks ago that Hillary has a bunch of friends who will register in the presidential primaries in New Hampshire. And the problem with all of that, of course, is Hillary's saying, oh, you know, I didn't authorize that. They're just some well-wishers that are stepping out doing this on my behalf. But, you know, I have no intention. But, you know, the term president certainly sounds awful good to me. Well, come on, people. If you know anything about Hillary, there ain't nothing ever been done by accident. Never, never, never has anything been done by accident in that woman's case. And don't you kid yourself. George is in trouble. This war is not going well, no matter where and how you look and where you turn around. Economically, the country is in deep doo-doo. At least 2.5 million jobs have been lost in this country since Junior took office. And that doesn't count all the millions upon millions of jobs that have been lost going back into the Clinton administration and prior to that. These are jobs that have been what they like to call outsourced. Yeah, right. They just sent the jobs overseas to work for pennies. So don't kid yourself. Hillary is waiting in the wings because these nine buffoons that are John Kerry and Joe Lee Berman, you know, that's Yada the Jew Boy Master. Who else we got out there? This guy, Dean Wesley Clark. I don't know what he is. He's not a Republic rat, a demagogue. Yeah, I guess he's both of them wrapped up into one. So we got all these things to face. So Hillary waiteth in the wings. And so we deal with this thing each and every day. We take a look at this thing. Of course, we're in the middle of Ramadan. Oh, no, that's Ramadan. And so I have to approach this subject matter called Muslim paranoia. Subtitled, The Enemies Made Us Impotent. Now, I really, Having followed Sudanese current events closely since, say, General Kitchener's victory over the Mahdi at the Battle of Omdurman in 1898. That's a long time ago. But a recent story from that benighted land happened to catch my eye. Last month, mass hysteria apparently swept the capital city of Khartoum. That's Charlton Heston made a movie about that city. After reports that foreigners were shaking hands with Sudanese men and causing their penises to disappear. You shouldn't expect less from Jerry. One victim, a fabric merchant, told his story to the London Arabic newspaper Al-Quds El-Arabi. A man from West Africa came into the shop and shook the store owner's hand powerfully until the owner felt his penis melt into his body. Now I know the feeling. The same thing happened to me after shaking hands with Senator Clinton about a year ago. Anyway, as Al-Quds reported, the store owner became hysterical and was taken to the hospital. The country's chief criminal attorney general, Yasir Ahmad Muhammad, told the Sudanese daily Al-Rai Al-Ram that the rumor broke out when one merchant went to another merchant to buy some Karkady. That's a Sudanese beverage. Over here we call it Coca-Cola. Over there it's Karkady. Suddenly the seller felt his penis shriveling. The invaluable Middle East Media Research Institute, in its exhaustive coverage, noted that the penises of Khartoum were vulnerable not merely to handshaking. Another victim, who refused to give his name, said that while he was at the market, a man approached him, gave him a comb, and asked him to comb his hair. And when he did so, within seconds, he said he felt a strange sensation and discovered that he has lost, you got it, his organ. Not the ones you play in church, dear. Tales of the vanishing penises have run rampant around the city, spread by cell phones and text messages. Sudan's Attorney General Salah Abu Zayed declared that all complaints about the missing penises would be brought before a special investigative committee, though doctors have determined that the first plaintiff was perfectly healthy. The health minister, Ahmad Bilal Othman, said that the epidemic was scientifically groundless and that it was sorcery, magic, or even an emotional problem. By now you're probably saying, oh, come on, Bennett, or Moraine, whatever your name is, this Sudanese penis thing is all very well, but you're sitting here broadcasting on Worldwide Christian Radio. What do we want to hear this story for? There's some big geopolitical argument behind all this tittering at shriveling manhoods, isn't there? Well, absolutely, my friends. For one thing, a week after the Malaysian prime minister told an Islamic summit that their enemies, the Jews, control the world, and got a standing ovation from 56 fellow Muslim leaders, it's useful to be reminded that the international Jewish conspiracy is comparatively one of the less loopy conspiracies in the Islamic world. They said they'll probably figure out a way to pin the disappearing penises on some or other agent of Zionism. After all, according to reports in Middle East newspapers, Israel laces Arab chewing gum with secret hormones to make Muslim men hot for Jewish babes who turn out to be Mossad agents. Come to think of it, remember those stories in the National Enquirer after 9/11 about Osama bin Laden being a polite way to put it, somewhat under-endowed in the trouser department. He spent most of the 90s in Sudan, didn't he? Who's to say some Zionist didn't sneak up and shake his hand while he was on a shopping trip to Khartoum? It is, my friends, in that sense, the perfect, emblematic tale of Islamic victimhood. The foreigners have made us impotent. It doesn't matter that the foreigners didn't do anything except shake hands. It doesn't matter whether you are in fact impotent. You feel impotent, just as, so we are told, millions of Muslims, from Algerian Islamists to the Bali bombers, feel humiliated by the Palestinian situation. Whether or not there is a rational basis for their sense of humiliation is somewhat irrelevant. And how an elephant got in my pants, no, that's another story. One of the things I would feel humiliated about if I had lived in the Arab world is that almost all the forms of expression of my anti-Westernism would be themselves Western in origin. Pan-Arabism was old-school 19th-century nationalism of the type that eventually unified the various German and Italian statelets, you know, little states, not a statelet, not the part something you eat, but statelets, little tiny states. Nasserism was transplanted European socialism. Baathism is a local anachronistic variant on tween wars fascist movements. I thought Baathism was what they all took on Saturday nights. But the Arabs even swiped Jew hatred from the Europeans. And though there was certainly friction between Jews and Muslims before the 20th century, it took the Europeans to package a disorganized, freelance dislike of Jews into a big-time ideology with the protocols of the Elders of Zion, Mein Kampf, and all the rest of those good, well-written publications. Now, even Islamic fundamentalism as we know it today, though ostensibly a rare example of a homegrown toxin, has, as a practical matter, more in common with European revolutionary movements than with traditional expressions of Islam, an essentially political project piggybacking on an ancient religion to create the ideology or idiotology of choice for the world's troublemakers. What, the Jews? Yeah. There's something pathetic about a culture so ignorant that even its pathologies have to be imported. But what do you expect? The telling detail of the vanishing penis hysteria is that it was spread by text messaging. You can own a cell phone and yet still believe that foreigners are able with a mere handshake to cause your penis to melt away. Aside from its doubts in its collective manhood, Sudan, my friends, is no laughing matter. 2 million people have been slaughtered there in the last decade. The Christian minority is vanishing a lot faster than that fabric merchant's privates, Osama, certainly found the country fertile ground for his idiotology. Sudanese Mujahideen have been captured as far afield as Algeria, Bosnia, Chechnya, Afghanistan, and Chicago. An economic basket case with a 27% literacy rate has managed to find enough spare cash to export revolutionary Islam to many other countries. And they got a $500 million worth of state-of-the-art Chinese weaponry from Iran. A handshake-fearing guy with a cell phone is one thing. What happens when the handshake-fearers have cell phones and a suitcase nuke? It's at the intersection of apparently indestructible ancient ignorance and cheap, widely available Western technology that the dark imponderables of the future lie. In 1898, after Kitchener slaughtered the dervishes at Omdurman, Hilaire Belloc wrote a characteristic, that's not Hillary Clinton, that's Hilaire Belloc, wrote a characteristically pithy sounds like a homosexual word. Oh, it's kind of pithy. A summation of the British technological advantage. He wrote these words, or she wrote these words. Whatever happens, we have got the Maxim gun, and they have not. But the dervishes have cell phones now. Then, and some dime store box cutters and a couple of ATM cards were all they needed to pull off 911. And there's plenty of people out there willing to help them get the cheap knockoffs of the 21st century Maxim guns. It's a good thing they don't call it the penis gun. We'll be back. Me and Hillary. Yeah, down by the schoolyard. Yeah.
I'm a pony baloney, plastic banana, good time and rock and roller. Well, back home, got alone, then buried the bones while kissing the babes without strollers.
Yeah, you buried that bone, all right.
It wasn't against the law. It wasn't against the law. What Vincent Foster saw, it wasn't against the law. Then I made it to D.C. I thought it'd be easy. After all, it's just a big convention. But the midterm elections were such a surprise. Didn't think you were paying attention. In 96, I said that I was running. In 96, said I was running, but I didn't say where. Goodbye, D-Day and Jocelyn Elders. You won't see me or Hillary out in the front yard. You won't see me or Hillary out in the front yard. Out of power. And as a man from Hope, I'm hoping that dope Webb Hubble only sings in the shower. In 96, I said that I'd be Ron Hatt in 96. Said I was running, but it didn't say where. Goodbye, Mike Espy. Where the heck is Lloyd Benson? You won't see me or Hillary out in the front yard. You won't see me or Hillary out in the front yard. You won't catch me or Hillary out in that front yard. Gonna keep my head down.
Yeah, maybe, but Hillary be having her eyes in that front yard in the Rose Garden one more time. Listen, my friends, we got to take a little break. We're running 5, almost 6 minutes over for a little bit of a commercial break. I know it's rare on this program, but it needs to be done. Be right back.
You may be surprised to learn that 1 plus 1 equals 19. The secrets to this ancient mathematical system are now revealed in the Million Man Math Made Easy video system.
Do you ever wonder why things just don't add up and you don't understand the division? Need answers? Well, now there's help. Hi, I'm Minister Louis Farrakhan, and with my Million Man Math Made Easy, you'll be able to go through life knowing who's got your number and why. Learn the secret about the 12 letters in Rush Limbaugh's name, the 7 so-called board members of the Federal Reserve System, and what they add up to. Learn a unique multiplication system that can turn a half a million into over 2 million, and that's just t-shirt sales alone. This Million Man Math system, stolen from our ancestors many years ago, is now available to you. So order today. Make sure you count.
The Million Man Math Made Easy video system, available today for just $9.95.
Wait a minute! Don't you listen to some white cracker named Johnny! You can order it for $59.95. Order today.
Bernard, what do you expect after you talk this way for 40 minutes? Bernard Goldberg, a non-Southern Baptist, speaking on behalf of CBS 48 Hours, the television program, stated one time, "We in the press like to say we're honest brokers of information, and it's just not true. The press does have an agenda." I share with you now the current column from Jeff Metcalf, which is posted on the Federal Observer. That's federalobserver.com. And if you've not joined us in the chat room thus far, please do so at www.federalobserver.com. And www does not stand for wide white women. You figure that one. It's World Wide Web. CBS, Mr. Metcalf begins, is in jeopardy of a cruel reality check that could and should cost some executives their jobs. The two-part miniseries that CBS intends to run during the crucial November sweeps period may well have the opposite effect network programmers desire. Traditionally, you see networks try to walk the razor's edge in offering programming that pushes the envelope while concurrently remaining sensitive to whom they offend. The ultimate objective is to acquire the largest audience. Audience, after all, is really the product, not the program or the star. It is the audience that is sold to the sponsors. Sponsors are buying the audience to whom they deliver their sales pitch. But it's counterintuitive and professionally disastrous to choose edgy over reason. Careers are made and lost over the delicate balance of how far networks can and do push the envelope before reaching the point of diminishing return. And my friend, CBS appears about to permit a sycophant political philosophy and prejudice to blow back into potentially epic negative consequences. The Reagan's miniseries, it's called, you know, Reagan's, according to the New York Times, believe it or not, of course, they've not proven over the last 70, 80, 90 years to be the most above board or honest of publications. But according to the New York Times and Matt Drudge, the Reagan miniseries is less a history and much more of a left-wing hatchet job on a much-loved conservative icon. The monumental bad judgment of the CBS brass is compounded by the tragic fact that the subject of their revisionist vitriol has Alzheimer's disease and is dying. Since Ronald Reagan, the personification of conservative values and principles, is incapable of defending himself, CBS is forcing the legions of those who respect and admire the man to do the heavy lifting. And my friends, I promise you, we will. Jim Rutenberg in the New York Times recently stated that this deconstruction of his, Reagan's presidency, is shot through a liberal lens, exaggerating his foibles and giving short shrift to his accomplishments. Already there are efforts to organize boycotts of CBS, and in a few moments we're going to give you a website that you can go to sign the petition to boycott CBS. They're going to boycott CBS and the businesses that choose to advertise in the mean-spirited revisionist effort to denigrate the Reagans. Now, my friends, this is not censorship or armchair programming. It is market reality. CBS most certainly can put whatever they want on the air. It's their candy store. However, they cannot compel audiences to watch. And there are consequences to things we do and do not do in this world. It is impossible to present entertainment product that will not offend someone. The objective usually is to attract the most number of likely prospects for whatever product is advertising. However, when the vehicle becomes so contentious as to drive away audience and advertisers, the negative consequences should outweigh the creative desire to proselytize. The collection of personalities connected with this project precluded any possibility of an even-handed objective chronicling of the Reagans. However, obviously the objective was never to recount history, but to excoriate the living symbol of producers' philosophic wrath. Consider in Hollywood, Barbra Streisand, producers Neil Mirone, Craig Zidane, they loathed, they hated Ronald Reagan. CBS chairman Les Moonves, Clinton's buddy, is ultimately responsible. Reagan, you see, is anathema to the liberal sycophant gospel, and notwithstanding protestations to the contrary, the pretentious political correct dogma of the left remains systemic at CBS. We around here for many years have referred to them as the communist broadcasting system. Well, it is significant, my friends, to note the film was vetted and approved by CBS lawyers and the suits. You know, these are the guys with the three-piece ones on with the ties at Sony Pictures Television. This is not a covert hit piece by producers in love with or in thrall of Barbra Streisand. Ronald Reagan was not and is not a perfect man, nor am I. However, he was a remarkable man who achieved remarkable things. The net results of his long life is extraordinary and should be acknowledged. And rather, no pun intended, Dan, CBS has chosen to diminish this icon, apparently to accommodate a political ideology that remains antithesis to a magnificent legacy. In an effort to defend the indefensible, producer Mirone, whose name is probably Moron, "This is not a vendetta," he said. "This is not revenge. It is about telling a good story in our honest sort of way." Yeah, I like that sort of way part. "We all believe it's a story that should be told." Well, that quote has to be the most disingenuous, duplicitous crock of excrement since Bill Clinton said, "I did not have sex with that woman." The New York Times further noted that some involved in the making of the movie said that they were girding for a considerable outcry from some of Reagan's more diehard supporters. Well, that is grossly inadequate a means of articulating what should and may happen. Not just more diehard supporters and are and will be outraged. Even left-wing diehards have acknowledged it's a hit piece. Payback time. And this could hurt Democrats more than the Gray Davis recall. The Reagans is nothing but Kill Bill without the hacked-off body parts. It is petty, it's mean, it's mean-spirited, it's character assassination, and it demands vengeance. CBS, as we've said, has every right to do whatever they want. However, they are a public company with a responsibility to a board of directors, with a responsibility to shareholders. Expect advertisers to seek the greater part of valor and disengage from the controversy. You remember the movie Heaven's Gate? Once it brought down a film studio. The Reagans, my friends, has the potential of significantly impacting on the entire November sweeps for CBS. Yes, payback is a bitch. There are consequences, CBS, and we hope you'll be on the receiving end. Well, I must share with you that Jeff Metcalf has been contacted by a gentleman who has already begun a website to boycott CBS. We invite you to check it out. Go to your library. It doesn't make any difference. If you're on the net, go to a friend's house. Go to the library. Do anything you can to get on the net. It's pretty simple. www.boycottcbs.com. You get that? www.boycottcbs.com. That's all one word now. Boycottcbs.com. And sign the petition. Do what you have to do. Spread the word. You talk about filth. You talk about vile nonsense. This is appalling to me that anyone is allowed to get away with this kind of filth. Don't think Streisand didn't have a hand in this. I firmly believe she did. She sucks. Uncle Jerry will be back with you in a moment after this additional commercial message. Hey, you going to start here?
Hello, I'm Minister Louis Farrakhan here with great news. Many millions have ordered the Million Man Mathmates system. However, some customers are calling, asking for a refund of their money because they do not understand the Million Man Mathmates system. So, as a service to these customers, we here at the Nation of Islam are sending out highly trained tutors from the Fruit of Islam who will come into your home and stay until you understand the Million Man Math Made Easy system. Ah, blessed silence.
Why not do what thousands have already done and order the Million Man Math Made Easy video system?
Wait a minute! It's not thousands, it's millions. Million Man Math Made Easy. Order yours today.
Louis Farrakhan, yeah, right. Million Man Math Made Easy. Well, my friends, this is when we get to that part of the program which is the real reason that Uncle Jerry has been brought here to talk with you today. It's going to take a moment or so to set this up because we really need an opening piece of music to set the stage, so to speak. And so stick around here. We'll see what we can do. Listen to these words carefully. You little kids know what the word liar means.
If you look for openness, it may be hard to find. But I can tell you what you need to hear. If you're seeking candidness, you're running way behind. In fact, I haven't told the truth in years. Perjury is such an ugly word. Everything you hear is not
find someone to swallow what? Well, my friends, as I mentioned prior to that musical interlude, that which we are about to share with you is the real reason Uncle Jerry was brought out of mothballs today. You see, the folks at CBS apparently hate Ronald Reagan so much that they're willing to go to any length to trash his legacy, even if it means fabricating events, making up quotes, and imagining conduct that Reagan administration insiders frankly say never took place. Too bad for the Tiffany Network that decision makers there are so agenda-driven that they'd pass over a far more juicy story, where CBS writers wouldn't even have to fabricate a single scene. Never mind Ron and Nancy, how about a movie depicting the real-life goings-on behind the scenes at Bill and Hillary's White House, based almost entirely on under-oath testimony given to federal investigators who probed the some 40-odd scandals that unfolded on the Clintons' watch. A reality-based Bill and Hillary, the movie, would be chock-full of sex, violence, and palace intrigue, not to mention oodles of gratuitous foul language, material that would virtually guarantee producers a box office smash. But in order to get this project rolling, my friends, we have taken the liberty here at Perspectives on America of penning a few scenes. Now, my note to CBS, feel free to lift the dialogue below verbatim, that which we're about to share with you. Scene 3, election night, 1976. Clinton campaign headquarters, Fayetteville, Arkansas. Campaign staffers console a crestfallen Hillary Clinton after her husband loses his first election race to Representative John Paul Hammerschmidt. Paul Frey, his campaign manager, says, "Hillary, we did everything we could, but Bill's youth worked against him. Folks here in Arkansas just think 30 is too young to be a congressman." Hillary's voice rising. "Don't give me that. It's your fault. You didn't get this vote out. You didn't do the legwork. You let this election slip through our hands, you effing Jew bastard." Wow. Mary Lee Frey comes back, and his Paul's wife, and says, "Hillary, Hillary, calm down. My husband's not even Jewish. Why would you use language like that?" Hillary comes back and says, "Don't give me that. Your fault. Get up." She's screaming now. She says, "I say he's an effing Jew. Then he's an effing Jew bastard." Mrs. Clinton picks up a stapler, throws it at Mrs. Frey. Wow. Scene 12, inauguration, January 20th, 1993. The Clintons have just taken up residence in the White House and are discussing plans for their future administration. The First Lady shouting, "Damn it, Bill, you promised me that office would be mine. I'm the one who made you president, and I'm the one who can break you. One word from me to the press and be chasing down 100 Jennifers. Tell Al to go F himself." "Man, the president, Hillary, Hillary, hush, the Secret Service can hear you. You've got to, I don't give a shit where you can hear me. I despise the vice president's office. I deserve it. I'm going to take it. And if Alan Tipper didn't like it, too bad." He then smashes the priceless Ming Dynasty vase given to President Benjamin Harrison. Scene 19. Reorganizing the travel office, May 10th, 1993. Hillary discusses new staffing requirements with White House personnel director David Watkins. And once again, she's screaming, "I don't care who you have to fire. We need those people out. We need our own people in those slots. Are you listening to me, you stupid idiot?" But Miss Clinton, Mr. Dale and his staff have been doing a reasonably good job making media travel arrangements for years now, and the press really likes them. I'm afraid this won't look good. You act like you haven't heard an effing word I'm saying. It's your job to find a way to do this so it doesn't look bad. I don't care if you have to call the FBI in and accuse them of mismanagement. Say he embezzled money. Make something up. Make it look like he discovered a crime or something. I don't care how you do it. Just do it." She then hurls a 19th century Waterford cut glass ashtray presented to President McKinley by Queen Victoria. Scene 27. War clouds over Bosnia, April 26th, 1996. President Clinton's in his Oval Office study. He's telephoning congressmen to line up support for deploying troops to the Balkans. He reaches Alabama Representative Sonny Callahan. The president says,
"Now, Sonny, I wouldn't be asking you for your support on this if I didn't appreciate the gravity of the situation. I want you to know that your president doesn't lightly send our military men and women into harm's way without fully appreciating the grave sacrifice I'm calling on them to make."
At that time, the door cracks open and Monica Lewinsky appears. President says,
Sonny, hold on for a second. Why, I just changed phones here?"
He then puts his hand over the receiver and motions for Monica to kneel down.
"Now, Sonny, where was I? Oh, that's right, Kosovo. As your commander-in-chief, I'm the one who has to bear the ultimate responsibility when the bullets start flying and, sorry, Sonny, just got a little cramp there. All that jogging, you all know that is. Now back to Bosnia. If those body bags start coming home, you know who your constituents are going to blame? Me. But I want you to know that I carry the weight of this office on my shoulders every day. To the left. Oh, yeah, that's right. Oh, yeah. Oh, oh. Sorry again there, Sonny. This cramp is really starting to act up. Let me call you right back."
Well, there you go, CBS. And you know what? We didn't even have to make up a single scene. Now, if CBS would do that story, they could even keep that off the small screen and go to the big screen. People be standing in line to see that film. Ladies and gentlemen, I realize that during the course of this program today, we have made several references to a missile crisis or penile crisis, as it were. And unfortunately, it's what we've all been getting. So I think you understand exactly where we're coming from. Now, when Uncle Jerry may be back to grace the presence of your living rooms and your offices and your warehouses and your cabs and your trucks as you roll across this great nation of ours, I do not know. But this much I have to share with you. For whatever unknown reason, my brother Jeff is going to make a recording of today's program available to you if you should, by any remote chance, want to get a hold of a copy of it. The compact discs, of course, run $16.95. The audio cassettes are $12.95. Sorry to get commercial, but we got to pay for my gas money to get over here to do the program, you understand? And you can get a hold of us by calling 623, area code 623-327-1778. That's 623-327-1778. Now, let me close this program by making one final statement. You are hearing it first, but your Uncle Jerry Marine has made a decision. So far, we're dealing with George Bush, nine buffoons on the Democratic ticket, all who have chosen to announce their candidacy from presidency, and one, it is Halloween, so I guess we can use the word witch, one witch waiting in the wings to throw her hat in the ring. Well, my friends, as an independent, libertarian type of candidate, Uncle Jerry Marine, this day is throwing his hat in the ring. We will officially be launching our Jerry Marine for President campaign within just a matter of days. Sometime next week, my brother may get around to telling you about it. I don't know, whenever time gets around to it. And, you know, we're going to have some Jerry Marine for President t-shirts. Look, who needs all this nonsense? Just remember something. We have just shared with you an hour of the horrors of what took place in the Clinton administration. And this could well be the horrors yet to come. And so I close, as my brother always says, although I'm adding something. Jerry Marine closes not only in laughter, but as my brother says, without apology. Don't forget Hillary. I am your Uncle Jerry Marine. Hillary's coming, baby. She wants the White House.
Start spreading the news. I'm leaving today. I want to be a part of it. New York, New York. These vagabond shoes are longing to stray right through the very heart of it. New York, New York. I want to wake up in a city that doesn't sleep and find I'm king of the hill.
If they be electing her, they're fast
top
asleep.
Of the heap.
Like the Yankees.
These little town blues are melting away. I'll make a brand new start of it in old New York. If I can make it there, I'll make it anywhere. It's up to you, New York. The hill, a number
it's up to you. New